We're in the holiday of Hanukkah.
Yeah.
And we know that during these days, many things happen, right? The Jewish people re-inaugurated the temple, Hanukkat Habayit, the inauguration of the temple. And we know that we won a war. We know that we were again given the possibility to perform certain mitzvot, like keeping Shabbat, keeping Brit Milah, circumcision, like Rosh Chodesh, putting doors back on our homes, right? The Greeks decreed that every Jew has to take the door off his home. Why?
Oh,
that's a good question. Why? So they knew that if you take away the privacy, if you take away that, they think, called the Jewish home, then you've broken the force that can withstand the Greeks. Meaning, the Greeks didn't want to kill us. The Greeks just said, be one of us. Stop believing in your special covenant with God, and then be like us, enjoy this world. What's this world all about? God gave you a body. What are you doing circumcising, ruining the body? God gave it to you perfect. Enjoy it as is. Enjoy life. What are you guys doing things different for? You have your own calendar. Stop keeping the holidays. Stop keeping your calendar. Why do you guys rest on Shabbos? Everyone else works. Go party on Shabbos. What are you keeping Shabbos for? So the Greeks, their goal was really to touch that covenant between us and God, and they said it explicitly. They said, we don't want to kill you. When they decreed we shouldn't keep Shabbos, so Jews went out and hid in a big cave, and they kept Shabbos there. And the Greeks heard about it, so they sent out their soldiers, they set an entrance to the cave, and they called into the cave, and they said, come on out, join us, have a beer. Enjoy, let's have a steak together. We're going to make a barbecue here. Why don't you join us? We're not looking to kill you. Just stop keeping the Shabbos. Be like us. And the Jews said, no, we're not coming out. God made a covenant with us. He made a pact with us. He told us, this is the life I want you to lead. We're not breaking that pact with God. Yeah, it's a lot of fun to have a barbecue. And so the Greeks brought wet wood, and they burned it at the entrance to the cave, and wet wood makes a lot of smoke. And they suffocated all the men, women, and children that were inside that cave. They killed them. Yeah. Their war was not about killing us. Their war was about, be like us. What do you guys have to be like you? We want you to be like Mike. Focus on the sports. You guys know that advertisement? Is it still around? I want to be like Mike.
It's not still around, but yes, I've heard of it.
Nike once had Michael Jordan. You guys heard of Michael Jordan, yeah? So they once had an ad, I want to be like Mike. Michael Jordan wore his Air Jordan, wore the sneaker that they manufactured after him. So everyone wanted to be like Mike. So the Greeks wanted us to be like Mike, to focus on the sports, focus on the physical, on the enjoyment of the world. And we said, no. So if you think about it, they were trying to make life easier for us. Like you say, don't circumcise your kid. I'm a moel. I can tell you it's not easy doing circumcision. It's not easy for the parents. It's not easy for the baby. It's not easy for the moel. You know, who wants to do an operation? And here you have people who tell you it's more fun without it. Why should you do it? Shabbos. Most people would like to work on Shabbos. So the question I want to ask you is, after all this war, so we keep Shabbos, we keep Bris Milah, we keep our calendar in the holidays, and we added something. We added a holiday where we light a candle, and then two, and then three, up to eight. And we don't only light it inside, we light it where it shines outside. What do you think we are saying? What do you think was the institution? And how do we understand who won this war? Meaning, you look around, Western civilization is seems to be thriving. Yep. I mean, the Greeks seem to be still around. So if we won the war, why are they still around? Who won the war?
Well, are they still around, or is this a different kind of Western culture now?
Okay. I mean, there are Greeks. I have Greek friends. I mean, they became Gerim. They're still Greeks. And there are... And there's definitely their civilization around. You could say, well, the Hashmonaim aren't around, or their descendants. So the descendants of the Greeks and their philosophies are still here. So who won the war? And what are we doing when we're lighting the candles? So, Yoshua, want to give us some insight?
What, repeat the question. we doing lighting the candles or
both? What are we supposed to? Your son's gonna come and say, Dad, I don't understand. What are we celebrating Hanukkah? And what are you gonna tell?
Well, that's tough. Depends how old he is.
12 years old.
What can we learn from
him? Oh, your son says, Dad, you're lighting candles. Very nice. Why don't we have a Hanukkah tree? And you'll say, well, Jews don't have a Hanukkah tree. And you'll say,
Jews have Hanukkah shirts. I've seen them.
So you'll say, well, we light candles. And he'll ask you, why, Dad? And what are you going to tell him? That's what you're going to tell him?
Yeah, that's a joke answer. Serious? Thank you. Why we light candles? To remember the miracles and triumph of Judaism, like the physical triumph over something spiritual.
I'm listening. I'm whatever you say.
I can tell you. I think one of the reasons we light the candles like publicly is like look like we can still do what we want. Like we can win.
Okay.
I think like that can be a very straightforward interpretation of why we're doing it in a very public fashion, but still in our own home at the same time.
What do you say? Let's think for a second what was going on here. What job were we given in the Torah? Hashem says, I want you to be a light unto the nations.
Yes.
What did the Greeks want to do? They wanted to say,
put us out.
Let's put you out. You're no different than anyone else. Be like us. You're not unique. We want you to be like us.
Yeah.
What are we saying when we light candles? We're saying we're still supposed to light externally. We're still supposed to show that God does have a role in this world. But there's more to it than that. There's more depth than that. On the first level, what we're showing is that Hashem gave us light, and Hashem gave us the continuum. But there's a much deeper understanding as to what was happening in Hanukkah. If we look at the Torah tells us what to do. So you'll say, well, the Torah discusses oxen. We don't have oxen today. The Torah discusses things that don't seem like, what are we supposed to do today? What?
Apply them to our days.
Oh, so the question is, how do you apply them to our days? One of the issues that the Jewish people had from the time Torah was given was the issue of the Torah Shebal Peh, the oral law. God said, I want you to accept my word. The Jewish people said, fine, yeah, Nasa v'nishma, we accept. God said, I want you... Oh, God said, I want you to listen to the rabbis. The rabbis are going to be given the tradition how to interpret the Torah, and you guys have to listen to them. And the Jewish people said, no way. We can interpret it just like them. Give us the Torah, we'll interpret it. Why should we accept their tradition? And that's when God had to hold the Torah, the mountain over our head. On the written law, the Jewish people were always willing to accept it. That's when they said Nasa v'nishma. Did you ever ask yourself, if they said Nasa v'nishma, why did God have to hold the mountain over their head? The reason God had to hold the mountain over their head is because they said, we're willing to accept your word, God, but let us interpret it. God said, no, there's a specific way. If you learn and study, you could be a rabbi. Whoever wants could be a rabbi. But study. I'm not just telling you, here, interpret it however you wish.
Whoever wants to be male can be a rabbi.
Oh, no. Go online and look up the class on Torah for Me, Question and Answers. You'll see we have a few classes about women being rabbis.
Okay.
A woman could also learn Torah. We had Dvorah, we had Miriam, we had women who were leaders of the Jewish people.
So why can't that happen now?
Who said it can?
I had a woman.
That deserves its own discussion.
Why people so scared of it?
So listen to the classes. We had an hour's worth of discussion about how it works. But that's not it's not precluded. It's just usually there's a division of tasks. Just like you're not going to take a blind man to be your tour guide. Everyone has their strengths and their roles using those strengths. So women have certain roles in Judaism, and they maintain the faith, and they maintain the house, and they maintain the fort. I mean, if not for them, we wouldn't be around. But they have their roles. Now, if you have a woman that has talents and she could use them to be the chief rabbi of Israel, so it's happened in our past. We had a chief rabbi named Dvorah. She was the chief prophetess, and she led the Jewish people to victory. Well, we've had that. That has happened. It's unique, but it can happen. If she has the talents for it, kol hakavod. No one's telling her not to do it. The average woman is going to have other jobs in this world. Just like the average person isn't the chief rabbi either. The average person should be learned or learn Torah. But okay, but that's a separate discussion. So part of what's happening in Hanukkah is that we have a rabbinic institution. It doesn't say Hanukkah in the Torah. Hanukkah is not only our strength to maintain the Torah and to continue being a shining light, but it's our strength in our connection to the oral law. That potential that the rabbis can come and institute a holiday, well, that's massive if you think about it. The Torah told us these are the holidays, and the rabbi said, well, now that God made us another miracle, we're adding a holiday.
Right.
That light represents not only our maintaining the Torah, but our maintaining the Torah with our tradition. Now, the mitzvah of Hanukkah, you guys learn about the mitzvah of Hanukkah? The mitzvah of lighting the candles?
Yeah.
Who must light? Ner ishu beso. You learned that term?
The man or his house.
Oh, so the mitzvah is the home. It's a mitzvah that revolves around the home. The main fight the Greeks had with us was the Jewish home.
Yeah, the front door. Yeah.
Oh,
you live here, it's your home.
Right now we're living here, but the home, when we speak about the home, we're talking about marriage, we're talking about children, we're talking about a home. This is a temporary home. You guys are living in the dorms here, so for now this is your home. But the greatest strength we have is our home. When the Jews went down to Egypt, so Yaakov brings in all the kids and he says, you all have to get married before we go down to Egypt. He says, Ishu beiso bo. When they came down to Egypt, each one had already set up their house. They didn't come down to Egypt before they set up their homes.
How they had 70 people because they were all married and had children by then.
Okay. But they were paired. They were married.
Yeah.
There's an aspect where when a person's alone, so he's very limited. And when the greatest strength we've had throughout our tradition is the Jewish home. The home that keeps Shabbos, that everyone gets together and keeps mitzvot, lights the candles, that's the strength that stood up to the Greeks, and that's the strength that could stand up to any test. It says, when we light Hanukkah candles, so we move up, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Yes.
In life, we have two rules. Ma'alin bakodesh, we always have to move up in holiness. And not down, right. Now, that's an important rule. That's an important rule for life. Sometimes a person feels like, where am I today? What am I going to amount to? You have to remember that even the smallest light can move up when you try to make the maximum of it. Well, it's not only any light helps, but a little bit of light can be a source of a big light. It's a beginning. You're working your way up. You're starting. There's a spark, but a spark can light a flame.
Exactly.
Small can become big. And you guys are, Bezat Shem, you're going out. So we're going to miss you. And we'd love to see you back here. We're waiting to see you back here. You could always come for a full year to learn. There's a lot to learn. You could always follow online. Every person has to work on growing. But you also have to remember that there's always that room for connection. If you enjoy the shiurim in Medrash, so you could learn Medrash. If you enjoy Parsha, you could learn Parsha. The Torah is a unique work in that other nations have works that if it's good for the most intelligent, then the common folk can't understand it. If it's good for the common folk, then the more intelligent are bored by it. The Torah is very unique. It's the greatest classic that was ever written by God. The greatness of the Torah can be seen in that every person, my 5-year-old son, comes home and tells me the parsha. And you find the person who's been studying the Torah for 70 years and he still sees new insight in the Torah. The Torah is a phenomenal gift that we were given, and it's something that we can all connect to. If you have a time in college where you have less time, so you guys can learn one halach a day, two halachs a day. There's always room. The question is, are we open to bringing in that light? The person has to be open to bringing in the light. And that's every person's responsibility. One of the things that are difficult is that sometimes we knock ourselves. Sometimes the person says, what am I going to amount to? When the wife of Potiphar grabbed Yosef, what'd she tell him? She told him, who are you kidding, Yosef? You know, and I know, that you haven't been living up to so many mitzvot. So, what's one more up there? What's wrong? And our sages tell us that when Yosef stood up to that test, he made waves throughout Egypt. Meaning in Egypt, people were constantly cheating on one another's spouses. Egypt was rampant with promiscuity. People were, when God killed the firstborn, no one understood it was the firstborn being killed, because a woman had a child, and the husband thought that that was the firstborn. He died. That was the husband's first child. The woman had another child, and that child died too. So they'd ask, why'd that child die? Because he wasn't from the husband. She was cheating on him. She was with the neighbor, and it was the neighbor's firstborn kid. So a lot of people were dying, and no one understood why. Because God was checking out, wait a second, was he the firstborn for the father? Was he the firstborn for the mother? Did she cheat? Did she go with a young guy, with the mailman? So yeah, it was the mailman's firstborn, so he has to die too. So Egypt was a place where men, women, everyone was cheating on everyone. And Yosef is living in Egypt, and he's a young man, he's 17 years old, very good looking, and she's begging him, come with me, who's going to know? No one's home, come on. When Yosef stood up to that test, and then he was brought before the Egyptian court, and the court said, no, his story pans out. She says he tried to come forcibly on her. He says she tried to grab him and he pulled away. So the Egyptian priest said, well, let's check. So they brought Yosef's garment, and they looked at it, and they analyzed it, and they saw that the threads were torn like he was pulling his head back, not like he was coming forward and she was pushing him back. Meaning, if he was coming forward, so she was pushing him by the neck, then the front would be a little bit worn or torn. And if it's like his story that she was pulling him forward and he was pulling back, so then in the back, that's where he's pulling his head against. So they checked the garment and they looked at it. I don't know what kind of microscope or how they analyzed it. They saw that it was torn the way Yosef's story went. So now all of Egypt hears that this Jew, what did he do? The woman said, come sin with me. And he said, no. And she grabbed him and said, please. And he said, no. And he pulled away. In all of Egypt, this hits the Egyptian New York Times. And everyone's reading about it, and everyone's talking. All of Egypt is buzzing. Now, this had great reverberations throughout Egypt. People started thinking, wait a second, wait. Maybe there's more to life than the way we've been living. And this impacted Egypt so greatly that when 13 years later, the Jewish people come down to Egypt, Egypt is a different place. Yosef, when he becomes king in our parasha, he controls the food. And the people tell him, we want food. We're out of food. We've run out of food. There's a famine. Yosef says, you want food, you have to circumcise. They say, if we cut off a piece of that, we're not going to enjoy life as much. Yosef says, you're right. Well, you have to learn to control yourself. And that's part of the way you can control yourself. So if you... Because a person who is circumcised enjoys cohabitation less than a person who is uncircumcised. There's you have less flesh there. So obviously there's less nerve endings and there's less sensitivity. So, I mean, bottom line, it's pretty clear scientifically, and we have this on tradition, I mean, before science came up with it, that a person that's circumcised is going to enjoy cohabitation less. That's our tradition. Today, science validates it too. So Yosef tells him, okay, go to Paro. You guys can do what you want. You want my food? I saved the food. You have to circumcise. So the Egyptians go to Paro. And they say, look, he's telling us to circumcise. Paro says, look, why didn't you guys store food? He told you there's going to be famine after 7 years. They said, we stored food and it all rotted. So he said, you see, he's smarter than you. His food didn't rot. Your food did rot. If you guys mess with him, maybe he'll curse you. You'll all drop dead. So you better listen to him. You want his food, you have to circumcise. So we have mass circumcision throughout Egypt. After the Egyptians are circumcised, they're different people. Their desire is lessened. They're still immoral, but to a lesser extent. And after this, when the Jews come down to Egypt, all of Egypt looks different. Egypt is not as defiled as it was. It's still the most defiled place in the world. It's still the filthiest place on the planet spiritually, but it's slightly better. Yosef's improved it. So Yosef was faced with a small test, the wife of Potiphar, and she's telling him, who are you kidding, Yosef? You're not perfect. And when Yosef stands up to that and he says, no, I have a job, I have to stand up to it, then Yosef not only saves himself, he paves the way for all of Egypt to become a more moral place. You guys are going to college. Whether you like it or not, you're going to be the light unto the nations. They're going to look at you as the Jew. You could say you are, you could say you aren't. You could play whatever game you want. At the end of the day, that's the way people are looking at you. The choices you make to cheat on a test, not to cheat on a test, to daven, not to daven, to do things that are permitted or prohibited, those choices aren't only a reflection on you. I had a guy come to me from the army this week. Told me the army is taking them, they're giving them a prize. they're taking them for a day off. Half a day, they're taking them, boys and girls, to the spa. Now, you understand that if boys and girls go to the spa, all kinds of improper things are going to happen there. Unfortunately, I mean, these are Jews. But he tells me, can I go? So I said, halachically, what does it mean? Going with a girl to a spa? No, I mean, if you had a men's spa, okay, but we know what's going to happen there. So he tells me, yeah, it's interesting. I wear a kippah in the army, and all the other guys who wear a kippah already said they're not going. When the general said, we're taking a vacation to the spa, so they said, we keep the Torah, we don't do that. We're not going into the spa with girls. So it's hot springs. You know, there are hot springs in Israel, natural hot springs. So the general asked him, what about you? And he told him, no, I don't want to go. And after we were learning, so he realized that he's not allowed to go. So he said to me, well, now if I go, I already told the general, I don't want to go. I don't want to go. It has nothing to do. I have better things to do with my time than travel all the way down south and go into hot springs. And if now I come and I tell the general, well, religiously I can't do it, so the general will think I'm just using an excuse. So I told him, I gave him the number of a general who's a friend of mine. I told him, call him up and ask him how to word it to your general so he'll buy into it. So the guy asked that we learn the halachos, and I showed him inside where it says that he can't do it. So he goes home, and the next morning he wakes up and he can't find his car keys. So he's looking all over for his car keys, and he can't find them. He calls his general and says, you're not going to believe this, but it's stupid. I can't find my car keys. I'm going to be late. So the general says, no, I know you're a serious guy. I know you're not playing games. Find the keys and come. But what's happening with the trip? So now after he's coming late to the base, he's already off to the left foot, and the general asks him, what's happening with the trip? So he tells him, I'll tell you the truth. I learned my rabbi last night that I'm really not allowed to do it. And I didn't realize, and I feel bad because you know I don't want to go. But just because I don't want to go, I would have come. So that alone, I wouldn't do that. You're making a trip for the whole platoon or whatever it is, the brigade, I don't know. I'd come. But I'm not allowed to do it. I can't do it. So the general said to him, if you can't do it religiously, no problem. No problem, so don't come. So he told me last night, he said, the second he had conviction, the second when the general asked him, he had a clear answer. He said, I can't. So general respected him. Everyone else that was religious on the base said, we can't. Religious Jews don't do that. He waffled. He didn't want to say no, didn't want to say yes. The second he stood up and said, no, I'm a religious Jew, I can't do that. So general respected him. He said, fine, okay, take the day off, enjoy, fine. I wouldn't want you to do something that goes against what you believe. You guys are going there, and sometimes it's very tempting to waffle. If you stand up and you say, this is Shabbos, I don't show up to class on Shabbos, I'm not going to be able to do homework on Shabbos. Shabbos, we rest, that's our tradition, I got to be with the family, I got to go to shul. They're going to respect you for it. When there was, you guys remember when Lieberman was a candidate for vice president?
Yes.
So Lieberman was interviewed by Larry King Live. So Larry King asked him, which two figures in history do you admire most? So Lieberman wanted to sound good before everyone. So Lieberman said, Moses and Jesus. And when he said that, he flopped. Because people don't want to see a Jew being Christian. If you're a Jew, and until now you've been proud you were a Jew, why did he win the elections? You guys know his history? There was a big debate. And
he does what he thinks is right.
Because he did what was right. There was a big debate, and they asked him, it's on Shabbos, it's Friday night, maybe you could find a way to do it, maybe talk to your rabbi. And Lieberman said, no, I'm an Orthodox Jew, I don't do debates on Friday night, I don't do debates on the Sabbath. And everyone thought that would backfire on him, but quite the contrary. When the crowd saw that he had principles that he sticks to, the crowd respected him more, and he won. That's how he became a senator. That was the turning point when he shot up in the polls. When they saw he has his principles and he sticks to them. When he went on Larry King Live and suddenly he waffled, then suddenly, Moses and Jesus, he's playing to the crowds. Then he went down in the polls. Hey, you guys are going out there, you have to be that light. That light means sometimes you'll shine in a smaller crowd, sometimes you'll shine in the eight lights. But if you hold on to it like the Jews held on to it, then you start lighting up the world. And you're not only representing yourself. Now, we have many stories in the Midrash. You guys know the story of Hannah and her seven sons? Hannah was brought before the king, and she had seven sons. And the king told the eldest son, bow to the idol. And the son said, I won't. He says, I'm going to kill you if you don't. So he said, it says in the Torah that Hashem is the only one. I won't. Killed him. Second son, third son. He reaches the seventh son, the little boy, and tells the child, you, at least, you bow. The child says, no. Hashem says, we should have no other God but him. So the king tells him, at least I'll drop my ring, pick it up, and you'll show everyone that you're listening. It'll look like you bowed. You would just bend down to pick it up. And the child refuses, and he's taken out to be executed. And his mother, the king tells the mother, why don't you convince him? He's a little boy. Convince him something. The child was 2-3 years old. So the mother went over to the child and hugged him and kissed him and said to him, my dear child, when you go up to Shemayim, you're going to meet Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. And you tell Avram, you bound one son, I bound all seven. When you go up to Avram, you go tell him that. And then she told him, and be strong, and the child went forward, and her seventh little boy was executed. So last night, my 5-year-old son came over to me, and he knows that there's a concept of chinuch. He asked me this past Shabbos, am I allowed to play with trees? So I told him, on Shabbos, you're not allowed to play with trees, but you're still too little, so you could still play. You don't have to worry about the mukta aspect of trees. When you'll be older, you'll stop touching trees. Trees are mukta, but you're still too little, so you're allowed to. So when we were here for Shabbos, 3 months ago, before you guys came, so he found a tenagurot. He found a coin on the floor. So he was playing with it, and the baby got a hold of it, and the baby was going to put it in his mouth, and it was a hazard. And I told him, you're not allowed to play with it. So he told me, wait, it's Shabbos. You're not allowed to touch it, but I'm allowed to touch it. So I told him, no, I want you to put it away. It's mukta. So I saw he wasn't listening. Put it in his pocket, and then he played with it. And then I saw it was a hazard for the baby. So I picked it up. You're allowed to take away a hazard. Even though it's mukta, you're allowed to take it away from the baby. And I went to put it, to hide it somewhere where he wouldn't reach it. So he ran after me, and he said, how can you touch it? It's Shabbos. You're an adult. You're not allowed to touch it. It's mukta for you. He was sure I'd never interfere in his game, so he could play whatever he wants. So yesterday, he comes over to me, and he says to me, Hannah's little boy, he was little. Why did he have to give up his life? He didn't yet have that mitzvah. He was still little. He was like me. Just like I could still play with branches on Shabbos. Why couldn't that little boy bow to the idol? Why did he have to give up his life? So this is what my 5-year-old son asked me last night. And I'm posing the question to you guys. So you're saying that Avodah Zarah is so important that even a 2-year-old, 3-year-old, however old that child was, is obligated to that mitzvah. We say a child doesn't have mitzvot till he's 13. Only rabbinically, the rabbis instituted that he practices, he trains. You're saying this mitzvah he has. You're right in that there are mitzvot that a child has. A parent is supposed to watch his child to keep Shabbos. The biblical mitzvot of Shabbat apply even to a child in as much as a parent watches him. There are certain mitzvot when it comes to eating kosher. A parent is responsible to ensure that his child, even as a minor, eats kosher. Yes, there are certain mitzvot that the Torah tells us as parents we have a responsibility, biblically, to ensure that our children maintain. But they're a rarity. So you're saying idol worship must be one of them, and that's why he gave up his life. Okay, it's an interesting answer, but we'd have to check for validation of that answer. We'd have to check for a source. Right. So you're saying that if you have to give up your life for it, then you'd certainly have to, minors would be obligated. Okay, it's an interesting answer. We'd have to look into it and see if it has halachic validity. What do you say, Effie?
The two things are very different. I mean, the whole reason why you can't use money is it's a touch money, so you might end up using it. If you're taking it away, you have no intention of doing anything wrong breaking Shabbos with it. And whereas if you're bowing down to idols, it's such a huge like disgrace to Hashem. It's like as long when you touch money, you're not turning away from God. Whereas if you're bowing down to idols, you're like rejecting God in His essence. In His essence. It's like,
yeah, but is he obligated to accept God when he's 3 years old? And if he has no, if he has almost no biblical obligations, can you say that he has an obligation to give up his life?
You don't want him to grow up the wrong way either.
That's true, but to give up his life, he ain't going to grow up at all. And all he was going to do is pick up the king's ring.
I think that there's something more to discuss here than just raw strength or a lot of messages. I mean, and I think that's a major part of it that we really haven't addressed before. Like, making such a dramatic statement in such an extreme situation, there's more to factor in than simply what halacha demands, you know?
So there's a lot to discuss in the direction that each of you was raising. There's a lot to discuss. I mean, there is a concept of shat hashmad, that there are times when we say they're trying to wipe out the religion, and then we say, even if they tell you just to change your shoelace, but the Jews wear shoelaces this way, you don't change your shoelace, because every little change they're trying to get you to do, they're trying to really break you from keeping the Torah in general. That's its own period in history, a time when they're trying to get the Jews to leave the faith, and that's the direction you're mentioning. And I don't know clearly what is the correct answer. I don't know yet if it's the direction you were saying or you were saying or you were saying. I haven't had a chance to look into it. My son stumped me. I never thought of it. I mean, I grew up with this story. I have to sit down and look into it. I don't know if all of what you're saying is right or there's one of your answers are correct. I could hear all answers, but I'd like to raise a different point to think about. Hannah's children were standing publicly. This wasn't just a question of what they themselves would do. It was a question of where the spirit of the people lay. It was a question of as people who the king was trying to show, I'm going to break the Jews and you guys will convert to the Greek way of life. This was one of his major public attempts to do that. And a person has to know that when there's a difference between the halacha that pertains to him as an individual and the halacha that pertains to him when he's not just on his own. There's a difference. The idea of Hanukkah is what are we inside, but what we're inside will also light externally, will also light up outside. Mm-hmm. So I think that when we depart, unfortunately we're departing, one of the things to think about is how much light will we give? My father always told us, we think of angels as these creatures that have wings and they fly and they do God's command. In every person's life, there are people who are angels. The word malach in Hebrew doesn't only mean a godly figure, an angel. The word malach can also mean a messenger, an emissary. And every person has to strive to be a malach in other people's lives. To be that angel that makes people's lives successful. Sometimes a person could go in the field of medicine and he saves thousands of lives. Sometimes people could go and research and discover a tremendous cure that saves thousands of people. And sometimes a person can just make that phone call to help his next door neighbor get a job. A person has to think, how is he going to be this light of Hanukkah? The light that's my home, I'm maintaining my fortification, I'm maintaining my principles, but I'm also shining outside. I'm lighting outside. So I'd like us to go over now to any questions you guys might have before you go.